good evening. Angie is in New Mexico for Dinkoe Shoshin, the gathering of light. It's a one of the four Shoshins that Koban established at his temples. So it's usually somewhere in September, October. And Angie's been doing Hokoji's, which is Jokoji's sister temple, for several years. Jokoji's having their Shoshin next week, starting Tuesday through Sunday. And then Jennifer Holman, who lives up there, is receiving the precepts on Sunday for the Sunday program. So if you'd like to come up just for the program or for that sweet event, would be very nice. You may have heard that Lori Levinson had died that night that we met last Tuesday night. She died about 11:30 that night, very peacefully, very peacefully. And Joyce went home from the hospital the next day, and she's quite well. So I'm Donna Lynn, filling in for Angie tonight. And let's do names again, please.
Brit, me too. Hisayo.
Pardon me?
Hisayo.
Hisayo.
Russ.
Samuel. Ellie.
Wendy.
Francois.
Excellent. You've been here before? You visited us, right? Yeah. Now I feel like passing the apples. It's beautiful. Quite in the spirit of what I'm going to be talking about tonight. I think it was way back last year, and when Jane was coordinator, or is that 2 years ago? Have you been coordinator? I can't keep up. But it was during a business meeting, and I was asked to talk more about Donna. And then I think I did. Wendy said I did. I had a little handout, and then was asked to talk about it tonight again. And Donna, it's spelled D-A-N-A, is the Sanskrit or Pali word. Pali is the first language that any of Buddha's words were documented in. And it means charity or generosity. It is the... you know, we were chanting at the very end after our service, which we always end our services with, the Bodhisattva talking about Mahasattvas, world-honored ones, the Maha Prajna Paramita. And Donna is one of the six paramitas that the bodhisattvas, the beings that have vowed to stay here on earth to help us with our suffering, to help us to enlightenment, to relieve our suffering and stay here, warriors in a sense. And there are, in our tradition, there are six virtues, six things that they value and they cultivate to become a bodhisattva. The first one is dana, which is generosity. And then there's one on ethics, that is like morality or the precepts. There's one on like vitality or strength and energy, one on meditation, patience. How could I forget? And the last one is prajna paramita, which is what we chant in our Heart Sutra, the wisdom. Some say the cultivation of all those virtues are prajna. And some people believe that the first paramita, dana, is really the only one that we need to work with or need to practice with. There's a story that I found on Aiken Roshi wrote in his book, The Practice of Perfections. Paramita, one translation is, or one way of looking at it, is the perfections, meaning what they aspire to. And the other for the paramitas, which I always like, is reaching the other shore, crossing over. And I just kind of love that whole idea of reaching the other shore, and that they say that it's the whole idea of the of working with our suffering, metaphorically going across the river and to a place of enlightenment or nirvana. Some say being in the river and the water itself is enough. But there's a lot of nice metaphors around that. But Aiken Roshi has a story in here where a monk is asked, by what means can the gateway of our school be entered? And Huhai, he says, the great monk master, he says, by means of the Dana Paramita, so the gateway of realization. The monk said, according to the Buddha, the Bodhisattva path comprises 6 paramitas. Why have you mentioned only the one? Please explain why this one alone provides a sufficient means for us to enter. The monk said, the master teacher said, deluded people fail to understand that by the other 5, that the other 5 all proceed from the Dana Paramita, and by its practice all the others are fulfilled. The monk asked, well, why is it called Dana Paramita? Dana means relinquishment. Relinquishment of what? Relinquishment of the dualism of opposites, which means relinquishment of ideas as to the dual nature of good and bad, being and non-being, void and non-void, pure and impure, and so on and so on. For me, simply, too, it's about the non-attachment of giving without expecting anything in return. That giving is a reward. It's this dualism. And giving, in the whole concept of who are you giving to? Like when you give somebody a hug, who is the receiver and who is giving the hug? It takes both of us to hug. realizing in the greater aspect that there is no other that we're giving to. There isn't this dualism. But that's the absolute, the most absolute way, well, not the most, but the absolute way of looking at Dana. In the very practical sense, most of us need to cultivate Dana. Most of us have to practice Dana. And looking at Dana as a practice is how I can work with it. I'd like to think I was born a generous person, but I've gotten pretty stingy along the way in my thoughts, which reflect my generosity, my charity and giving. And thinking about this, we talk mainly around Dana as in almost an exchange for Dharma talks or staying at a Zen center. And truly, the practice, in fact, the very original term of Dana was that it was the teachings. And then later, as the teachings came out and more people listened to them, that it got to be meant more than just the teachings. It meant all that it took to support the monks, the temples, and all of the teachings. But it's not in exchange for anything. I mean, the Dharma, in a sense, is everywhere. It's about the practice of generosity. It's about it's about learning not to be attached to the outcomes, learning about letting go. It's about cultivating our kindness and compassion. The Dana that is solicited in a way that you can say or requested or is really an opportunity for someone to practice Dana. The way to, for me to start working with it was, what was I not generous with? What was I holding on to? What was I attached to? Simplest way, I was holding on to a lot of my feelings, not even sharing with myself, let alone others. I've been very stingy with praise and giving direct feedback at times in my life also. And for the long time, I gave gifts because I thought I was expected to give gifts. You know, like, she gave me a birthday gift, so I got to give her a birthday gift. And if I don't give her a birthday gift, then she'll be mad at me. And or if I make my husband a really nice dinner, maybe he'll mow the lawn or take the trash out. Or, do you know what I mean? Giving things. And I have just a little bit of a, well, some things had a big hook attached to them. I mean, even when I started giving donations to local groups, you know, it was like, oh, you know, hope somebody noticed that or saw that, or, my name, you know. I was still attached. Was not cultivating in the true essence of Dana, of giving with no attachment. This last weekend I had a workshop for 11 women attended. It was a wonderful, wonderful workshop. And I was just feeling how they were practicing Dana, how they were practicing generosity by trusting each other and sharing with each other, that the ways that they, their dreams, their hopes, their goals. And that way I thought was very generous. It's like even giving somebody a back rub. You know, if I give them a back rub, maybe they'll give me a back rub. Does that kind of make, I mean, it's the whole, this, it's very interesting. In Zen mind, beginner's mind, Suzuki Roshi talks about it, and every existence in man, every existence in the human world, every cultural work that we create is something which was given or is being given to us, relatively speaking. But as everything is originally one, we are, in actuality, giving out everything. Moment after moment, we are creating something, and this is the joy of our life. But this I, which is creating and always giving out something, is not the small I. It is the big I. Even though you do not realize the oneness of this big I with everything, when you give something, you feel good. When you give something, you feel good, because at that time, you feel at one with what you are giving. That is why it feels better to give than to take. We have a saying, Dana Prajna Paramita. Dana means to give. Prajna is wisdom. Paramita means to cross over or to reach the other shore. Our life can be seen as crossing a river. The goal of our life's effort is to reach the other shore, nirvana. Prajna Paramita, the true wisdom of life, is that in each step of the way, the other shore is actually reached. To reach the other shore with each step of crossing is the way of true living. Dana Prajna Paramita is the first of the six ways of true living. The second is Sila, or the Buddhist precepts. Then there is Shante, or endurance, Vaira, which is ardor or energy, or constant effort is the way he translates it. Meditation, Zen practice, meditation, and Prajna Paramita, or wisdom, is number six. Actually, these six Prajna Paramitas are one. But as we observe in life from various sides, we count six. Dogen Zenji said, to give is non-attachment. That is, just not to attach to anything is to give. It does not matter what is given. To give a penny or a piece of leaf is Dana Prajna Paramita. To give one line or even one word of the teaching is Dana Prajna Paramita. If given in the spirit of non-attachment, the material offering and the teaching offering have the same value. With the right spirit, all that we do, all that we create, is Dana Prajna Paramita. So Dogen said, to produce something is to participate in human activity, is also Dana Prajna Paramita. To provide a ferry boat for people or to make a bridge for people is a Dana Prajna Paramita. Actually, to give one line of the teaching may be to make a ferry boat for someone. Thinking about this too, I've worked this with my clients, and I thought about when I worked in the corporate world and when I worked for someone who actually gave me a paycheck. And I'd have very defined job roles, and I did my job. And many times I didn't feel, you know, like appreciated, even though that they were paying me. It was very interesting about, also I wanted, it felt like I wanted to give more, or to give more of my, what I was capable of doing. I wanted to have more meaning in my life, or more, you know, contact with what was important, or aligned with my values. And looking back now, I see that as a bit of a of what, again, generosity is, in a sense, is that we want to give something to the world. We want something more than what we're paid for, in a sense. Or want to give more than what we're paid for is actually what I meant to say. So I think we have it to, in ourselves, but it's not cultivated very well in our society. We pay for a cup of coffee. We pay to cross a bridge. Money is the way that we show what things are valuable, and we pay for them. So the practice, or sitting here, that like we do here in the Friend's House every week, it sustained more than just the dana that is put in the our bowls that we have in the back of the room there where we enter. And in fact, it's one of the very few places that I can think of where it is based on dana, totally based on dana, since we don't have any paying positions for anyone. But it takes more than that money. It takes the time and effort for someone to come in, set up the chairs. That's giving. That's charity. And then we sit in them, or we sit on the cushions and on the floor. Somebody sets up our temporary altar and then puts it away. Angie or someone prepares for a talk and gives a talk. Somebody opens up the bathroom. Someone cleans the bathroom. Someone uses the bathroom. It's all a movement of giving and receiving. It's hard to separate. And there's many ways to cultivate this practice. There was one of my favorite, one of my favorite, most interesting websites is called wisebrain.org. And he has a, talks a lot about what's good for our brain and what's good for our bodies. And of course, giving is good. But he has a list here of how to cultivate, very simple ways of how to cultivate the practices of giving. What time is it, dear heart? 10 till? Oh, goodness. But I want to read you a couple of them, and then I want to see what kind of ideas that you might have or whatnot. But the first one of what he has listed here is the practices of giving is open your heart. Just that. Open your heart. Take in the pleasures of generosity so that the gladness of the heart motivates you, as the Buddha suggested, toward more generosity in the future. Identify forms of giving that you naturally, effortlessly enjoy, and do more of those. Because I tend to believe what you really enjoy doing, probably there's something about giving involved with it. Planting a garden, sowing seeds. It's giving to the earth, it's giving, you know, it's creating something for someone to eat. Art, singing. Identify forms of giving that you naturally, effortlessly enjoy and do more of these. Another idea he has is decouple working from its results. So the effort and the activity itself is a practice of generous giving. Stretch yourself. Give a little more than you planned and see how it feels. And as a focused experiment, push through a specific fear about giving and see what happens. When I first lost my job, or the first job that I lost, I was fearful of giving Donna. Well, if I give it away, I won't have enough money to buy groceries and make the mortgage payment. And it's all very interesting. When I let go of that fear and really work with that fear, increasing it just a little bit more, or decreasing it when I felt very fearful, the whole thing went away. And I remember doing a talk and a workshop, and out of the blue, someone sent me a check with my name on it and money. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, someone that I had just met sent me a $100 check to support my practice. That just like, it just blew my paradigm away. It validated me to trust, to give more freely. Anyway, those are some of my thoughts. They were all over the place. I do apologize. From big to small, to practical, to idealist. Must have been the heat. I thought Britt was never going to ring that bell tonight. Well, what do you think about all this? I probably talked more than I should have, but it's a very interesting topic. Britt?
You talk a lot about giving, and then you use the word, you said giving is better than taking, or something like that.
Better than receiving, yeah.
You said taking.
Oh. So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay.
So, as I was saying, what about receiving?
Oh.
And what about when you're either receiving a gift you don't want, or you have to give something you don't want to give, or you're afraid the person won't receive it?
Yeah. Well, that's an attachment, huh? Isn't that interesting? Yeah. So for me, I've been working with that. You know, like, oh, wow, is this too weird? I made it, you know. Maybe they would rather have something that bought from the store, or something of more value. But to give with no attachment, because I'm learning to give with my heart, the essence of it, of recognizing it as a gift. I think that again is the attachment to it, wanting them to, you know, see it or have it in a different way. And then I guess maybe, you know, you could converse, you know, at least say, I don't know, I mean, for them to really be, for me to be generous, then I'm maybe to give them a gift they really want and let go of my attachment to it. Like, I know they would really, you know, like that red leather purse or something. I don't know. There's some kind of attachment involved, I think, in both ways. And no, it wasn't here. Here it is. This is a quote supposedly from the Buddha. But if people knew, as I know, the results of giving and sharing, they would not eat a meal without sharing it, nor would they allow the taint of stinginess or meanness to overtake their minds. And I think many great people have said something very similar to that. If only we could all share a meal. Any other thoughts about this before closing, or contradictions, or something I said goofy, taking, receiving, giving?
The only thing that is you apologize for being all over the place. That's the only thing that I felt that was out of place.
Okay.
You're giving.
Well, that was my intention. You're right. Yeah. It's so interesting. It's, you know, Dana is a practice. It's really interesting. It's not, you know, it's not something defined, like, you know, you're told what to do, you know. Sometimes that's just better. Russ.
Well, I've been experiencing something unusual. I started a new job, and I'm working for a gentleman of Indian heritage once again. And you know, a couple of months ago, he says, you know, meet me downtown in San Jose at the St. James Park. So I meet with him at the St. James Park downtown in the afternoon, and he has 60 burritos, vegetarian burritos. So he does this, and I follow him, handing out vegetarian burritos to the people at St. James Park, and then after he hands everybody burritos and something to drink, then he makes his way down to Santa Clara Street, and he hands it out to people. And just, it's interesting. I've never been, you know, in that type of thing, because I've never done that before, but it's just a very interesting thing, you know.
How did it feel to watch him do it? Did you get to hand that out too, or?
Yeah, he asked me to help him, and handed out, but it's a paradigm of very different, you know. So this is what he does. Every 2 weeks, his wife and girlfriends make these burritos, vegetarian burritos. They go downtown, or they go right by the, we went also by the HP Center. There's a park over there, and we find people that are on the grass over there, and he just hands them out, and they know the people by personality, and, you know, because they do it. It's just, I would never think that somebody does something like that. They do it very quietly. They don't make any, you know, not to be noticed or anything, but they consistently do it like clockwork. Even one day last week, he calls me up. He says, listen, he says, you got to go downtown. I said, well, why don't I wait for you? Because I can do this process with you. He says, no, I'm out of town and you got to go. He says, pick up the burritos at my glass house.
Can you bring him here next time? We'd like to try those veggie burritos.
But when you talk about, you know, giving that, it's something that, you know, I've never experienced, and he's given me an opportunity to see this, and everybody that you give these to, you know, you don't, you just say, would you like a burrito? And they're most very gracious, you know, to accept it. You know, there might be an occasional person who says, you might say, what's it going to cost? But for the most part, the people, you know, just recline on the ground or hanging out with their friends, and they just say, thank you very much. And they, you know, a lot of times they're excited that somebody's come to give him something like that. So, and he funds it out of his own pocket, too. You know, just, and he says to me, he says, money always comes back to me. He says, the more I give, we don't know where the money's going to come from, but it always comes back, it's always there. So that's a very interesting, I don't know if you want to call it metaphysical dimension of this whole thing, too.
It's very amazing. It's very amazing. I was talking with this, there's many people that have, I mean, as a lay practitioners, and I'm going over, huh? Just quickly, because this very much interests me, and this is where my fear is, you know, if I quit working like a normal American, you know, how am I going to support myself? You know, how am I going to do this if I don't have a job and, you know, and nobody will hire me anyway because I want to go off to Shoshin and, you know, I was talking with Gil Fonsdale, who is the full-time resident, the main teacher up at Insight Meditation Center. And he's always had pretty much a monastic life and an academic life, I believe. And here he is, he's the head teacher, and that's his job. He totally relies on Donna. And he's married. And he has two small children. And I go, How do you do that? You know, he goes, he just says it's amazing that I'm supported. Now, it's an unusual thing here. In Asia, it's not so unusual. It's a common India and, you know, it's not unusual. So it's very interesting. Some call it merit too. That's why it's so popular in a sense. That when we give, we receive merit. Which is why it's very common, and I believe in the Asian countries. But again, to give without thought of merit. Or not thought of where the money is coming from, and with the no attachments. It's a very tricky practice. We're not well supported for that. They're looked at as weird, huh? Thanks for sharing that. Give us a call next time. That's great. That's why.
Yeah. Speaking of merit, my company just made me an offer to go to Portland. And so in just one single swoop, the relief of having a secure job and being able to provide for my kids and for my ex-wife. But also, to leave or leaving, it's you know, my problems, it got simplified by an infinite amount and complicated by an infinite amount in the same school. It feels so good to have the company come and say, you're valued, and mm-hmm. we really want you to come, and it's and you're important. That just in itself, just wow, just makes me feel great.
Yeah.
So,
congratulations.
Yeah. Condolences.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah. Bittersweet. And the practice also is not about giving as to not support ourselves. That's a whole nother topic, but I mean, it's all just so rich, but we can't serve other people. We can't take care of our families if we give it all away. There's many stories about that too. All right.
Can we eat apples now?
Yeah. I thank you very much for letting me share that with you.